If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Good day and greetings to all of you loyal, patient How to Be Sound listeners, and welcome to a long overdue new episode of the podcast. I hope you all find time to listen to and enjoy last week's bonus episode, which was a little snippet from my producer Liam Garrity's Meet Your Maker, featuring Louise Gold, one of the first ever female Muppeteers. You can subscribe to Meet Your Maker wherever you get your podcasts, basically wherever you're listening to this. But back to business. This episode of How to Be Sound is brought to you by Schuppaella, a designer consignment store with not one, not two, but four locations in Dublin and an online shop at schuppaella.com. They sell lightly worn, pre-loved designer and high street clothing and accessories, as well as their own range of carefully chosen bits and pieces under their Schuppa Edit and Schuppa Home labels. And to celebrate our little partnership, Schuppaella is offering 15% off all Schuppa Edit and Schuppa Home items when you enter the code ROSEMARY, all lowercase, at checkout. This discount is not valid on the pre-loved designer gear because that stuff is already heavily discounted. So you'll get Chanel, Gucci, Louis Vuitton and more, all guaranteed authentic by the crack team at Schuppaella for a fraction of what you pay for them brand new. Check them out at schuppaella.com. That's S-I-O-P-A-E-L-L-A.com now, and enter the code ROSEMARY, lowercase, for 15% off the Schuppa Edit and Schuppa Home ranges until September 31st, 2018. This episode is also brought to you by me and my producer, Liam. We work tirelessly to put together each episode of the podcast, and that takes time, research, experience and equipment, none of which comes for free, except maybe time. But I would argue that time is the most valuable commodity of all. Anyway, if you like the podcast, enjoy reading my blog, feel like creatives should be paid for their work and have $1 per month to spare, you can support me and How to Be Sound by becoming a patron at patreon.com/rosemarymccabe. That's patreon.com/rosemarymccabe. You'll also get extra special bonus content, access to the How to Be Sound book club, which is having its inaugural meetup in September, and you'll get your name read out at the end of every podcast, so stay tuned for that thrilling reading session. Now to the task at hand, the new episode. Joining me in studio today, I have sexpert Shauna Scott, owner of sexshuppa.ie, recent first date star, and even more recent wedding celebrant, here to talk love, dating, and dildos. Shauna, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Rosemary.
Thank you so much for coming. Tell me about you, right? So it's pretty obvious from hearing your voice, even that tiny snippet people have heard there, that you're not from here.
No, I'm from Seattle originally, but I've been living...
What brought you here?
I dropped out of college when I was 20. I did like 6 months of college, realized that it wasn't for me, and I dropped out, and I had a year to use my student visa, and I kind of wanted to go traveling. I'd been to Ireland once before, but I never went to Dublin. So I really wanted to see Dublin. Came over on my student visa, spent like 4 months working in a pub, and fell in love with someone. And then went home, did the long distancing for a while, and came back and got married.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Subsequently divorced, but we don't
okay,
really.
Okay, well, listen.
Yeah, we can skip past that.
Life comes at you fast. And when did you decide to set up Sexshuppa? So you were working in a pub, you went back to Seattle, and what were you doing then?
So back home, I was working in a photo lab, which I loved, and like I got into photography. Myself and my ex-husband were both photographers. We did a lot of music photography, wedding photography, like just kind of event photography generally. We were both working in a chemist and doing photography on the side, so we kind of both were working like two full-time jobs. And then when we separated, I continued to do the photography thing part-time. And then around 2011, I was in the market for a vibrator and was doing my market research, like looking or product research even, and looking for a vibrator that would suit me. And just from reading the blogs, realized that the industry as a whole is largely unregulated. So you can make a sex toy out of any old crap, and it's perfectly legal to do so.
What's the weirdest thing you've seen a sex toy made of?
Well, the worst is PVC, because PVC is completely porous. So you can...
Oh, gross.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, PVC in its natural state is a solid. Like, your pipes are made out of it, and it's perfectly perfectly fine for it to be like in a solid state. But when you use plastic softeners to make it into that kind of jelly texture that we'd see in a lot of like rabbit vibrators.
Oh my God, I think I have one at home.
You need to throw it out. You're going to throw it out.
Just before we go on with the PVC though, yeah. Does that go in the waste electronic?
You can't.
What bin does that go in?
It doesn't go in the waste electronics.
You just put it
they
in the
won't
landfill.
Take it because it's technically a yeah.
Oh gross. Yeah. Okay.
The Wii boxes can't take it because it's technically a biohazard because it's been used internally. So it ends up in a landfill, which is why another reason why I tell everybody, apart from the fact that like you want to buy a toy that's going to be non-toxic to you, the environmental implications of buying a toy that's going to be made of something like silicone that's going to last you years and years and years versus a toy that's going to last you maybe 6 months to a year and then you're going to have to toss into a landfill.
Okay. And I mean, can you buy biodegradable toys? Probably not.
No.
That'd be weird.
No.
When you first set up Sex Shippa, how was it received or how long did it take you to start to kind of gain traction in Ireland?
When I first started, it was kind of like taking a bit of a gamble because I was being told by everybody that Ireland was not ready to talk about sex toys, that when they opened Ann Summers on O'Connell Street, they got
there
sent...
There were riots.
There were riots. They got sent a bullet in the post. Yeah.
Extreme.
But that was like 1999 and this was like 2011, 2012 is when I started like preparing to open the shop. And I was like, no, I have this gut feeling inside of me that Ireland is ready and y'all better like hold on to your seats. So I opened up the shop and then like nothing. I couldn't get an interview to save my life. I was getting in customers, but I couldn't get any kind of like media coverage.
PR,
no one
press, yeah.
No one wanted to talk to me. I mean, I don't come from a PR background. Mm-hmm. I didn't know anyone in media. So it was very hard for me to get a foothold.
You know what the media loves as well? They love a good tragic story. So like if you'd had a story where you were like, I got toxic shock syndrome, lost an arm, and then I set up this sex shop because I got it from do you know what I mean? That would have been a great story.
Yeah. And I didn't have anything tragic happen to me. So I got in Dublin magazine, did a feature on me, and then a few months later I won a web award for best e-commerce site in Ireland. I bet Vodafone and Avoca.
And oh, wow.
Like, and this was in my first year of business. I won best e-commerce, not best sex shop e-commerce, just best e-commerce website.
They were raging.
And it was like, it was a website that my boyfriend at the time had made for me. And so it was like, it was such a big deal. And I was in a room surrounded with all of these web agencies who had spent thousands and thousands like building websites for people and stuff. And then here comes like me and my boyfriend with our little like mom and pop shop. Oh, and then I got so much traffic that night that the website fell over because of course it was the first website that either of us had built. Mm-hmm. So we had a very difficult conversation. We were like, we're gonna have to kill our baby. So we killed the baby and went with a different platform. I'm now with Shopify. And then after that, because I was getting so much traffic and so much attention, then people started to take notice. And then it just kind of snowballed from there where like I was suddenly getting lots of messages from newspapers and magazines and going on radio and television and stuff. And it's just, yeah, it's just been brilliant. So I think like once you kind of get your foot in the door, it's much easier to mm-hmm. approach a media outlet and say like, look, this is a cool thing that I'm doing. Yeah. And please take notice of me.
I mean, even from a media point of view, I remember when I'd be looking for anything specific, you'd be looking for a counselor who specializes in child psychology and you'd Google it and you'd find that they'd been used in a different magazine and that they gave good quotes.
Yeah.
And you'd go, okay, great, I'm going to talk to them.
Yeah.
And like also, I guess 15 years ago, we weren't writing about sex in the same way that we are now. So from a journalism point of view,
completely different. Yeah,
yeah. People didn't need your quotes. Whereas now it's like we're, you know, writing articles about why Irish women don't talk about masturbating and, you know, like all these different things where that's something that you could talk about.
Because even,
I mean?
Because even 6 years ago when I first started, the way we were talking about sex and the way like my shop was written about was in kind of a sensationalized, kind of titillating, red top sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
And it...
Would you believe it?
Yeah, yeah. Look, there's a girl and she's, you know, selling sex toys and stuff. And I really appreciated the attention that I was getting. But at the same time, I'm like, look, there's so much that I want to say other than I run a sex shop. There's mm-hmm. so much more mm-hmm. about sex that I want to say than, hey, look at these dildos that I sell. Because it's... The shop is much more important to me than just selling stuff. Now, obviously, like, I have to make a living as well, but it's, I started the shop because it was something that was important to me, not necessarily as just, like, another way to make money. Because there are, trust me, far easier ways to make money. Like, if that were the case, I would just get a job in the civil service.
Yeah.
Get that nice, permanent, pensionable job. But I didn't want that. I wanted something that I was going to be personally fulfilled by and feel like I'm making some sort of difference in people's lives.
Did you get any backlash? Did you get any bullets in the post?
No, no bullets in the post, thankfully. You do occasionally get the odd email from someone, not necessarily being negative, but just being slightly inappropriate. Like, inappropriate ways of, like, talking to me. And I know I've told you about this before, but, like, I'll occasionally get, like, people sliding into my DMs and, you know, asking me on a date, asking me for sex. And I'm like, that's not what I'm here for.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's necessarily because of my business specifically or just because I'm a woman on the internet.
It's probably a bit of both. Because I was talking to somebody about this today and I said that somebody had slid into my DMs and it was a bit suspicious. And the guy I was talking to said, what do you mean? Like, maybe he's just being nice. And I said, no, it was just a bit this. And I couldn't explain it.
Yeah.
And then I changed the subject. And then I went, you know what? Actually, the thing is, as a woman online, you get used to people sliding into your DMs.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, as a person online, people slide into your DMs all the time. And I don't mean that it's not always suspicious.
Yeah.
But you learn when it is. You know what I mean?
You
can feel
that,
the tone where you're like, I know what you're getting at.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sometimes it might be hard for straight guys to see, because they'll just be like, oh, well, we give everybody benefit of the doubt. And the problem is, like, we, you know, women give men the benefit of the doubt all the time and always ends up being dodgy. Always.
Yeah. I think the guy I was talking to as well was kind of going, oh, you know, everything isn't, like, I get this a lot. Like, everything isn't a feminist thing. And I was going, no, but remember you were telling me about that time that you were getting all these girls sliding into your DMs and you could probably tell which ones were going, I'm interested in your work, and which ones were going, I'm interested in you. And he was like, oh yeah, you're right. And I was like, it happens us all as well.
Yeah.
Except for, I think if you're a woman online, it happens a lot more, because I think being available online somehow, you know, it's like those traffic light parties.
Mm.
If you're online and you're tweeting and, you know, people know that you're single, or you're tweeting in any way about sex or talking about it online, it's suddenly like green light.
Yeah.
You know, slide on in there.
Yeah.
Gross. I'm sorry I said that now. People may know your voice also from First Dates Ireland.
Yes.
How did that happen?
That happened because I got singled last year. Went through a breakup, and then a couple months later, a friend of mine jokingly said, well, why don't you go on First Dates? And I'm like, I love First Dates. First Dates Ireland is so much fun. Whatever way Coco Television do their production, it's so sweet, and they take, like, real people. It's not, like, there's no actors. I mean, I'm sure there's actors that go on the show. And they do genuinely, I think, try to pair you with someone that they think that you'll get on with really well. As a nation, we love to live tweet and watch TV together, which I love. It's like a nationwide Gogglebox in a way. And so you'll see people, like, rooting for people on Twitter. And I'm like, I love that. I love kind of the positive energy that it brings to Twitter, because Twitter is like a garbage fire. But there's something about the way that we live tweet Eurovision and First Dates and the toy show.
Oh, it's absolutely my favorite way to watch TV. It is live on Twitter.
And it's just this real, it's just such a positive energy.
It's so
and I was
fun.
Like, okay, well, if I was going to go on any kind of reality TV, this would probably be it. So I sent them a message. I'm like, hey, guess what? I run a sex shop. Also, I like want to find someone to go on a date with, because I was having difficulty with, like, OkCupid, Tinder. It just wasn't for me, because I'm the kind of person that I feel like I have to get to know someone really well before I have feelings for them. And then once I have feelings for them, then I'm a goner.
Yeah.
But, like, to get to that point, I feel like I need to, like, get to know someone. So it's very difficult for me to, like, look at a profile or just, like, look at a photo of someone and
be like,
it's
so hard. Like, when I'm on Tinder, I feel like swiping right for almost everyone, because I'm like, I could see how you'd be cute if we get on. I could see you cute if you have a good sense of humor. I could see how you could be cute if XYZ. And then you get drawn to them and you're like, oh no.
But I don't even get to the point of, like, chatting with people, because I'm just like, ugh, swipe, swipe. Because I'm so cynical about, I'm just like, oh, that person looks like they would judge me for running a sex shop.
Maybe Tinder is the one area in life where I'm a positive person. Where like I become a, you could be nice. Whereas the rest of the time I'm like, you're awful.
I'm super pessimistic when it comes to online datings. And so I thought first dates would be a bit of crack. I could shout out the name of my shop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, if it goes well, I like have a nice date with someone and then we could take it from there. I can get to know that person and take it from there.
For anybody who didn't see it,
yeah.
Did it go well?
Not particularly.
Did you watch the episode back afterwards?
I did. So I watched it with the guy who is now my boyfriend.
Not the guy you went on the date with on first.
Not the guy that I went on the date with. Yeah, it was funny because that entire time when I was on OkCupid and then like did the audition for First Dates and got on First Dates, and when I was chatting with this guy for ages, he was a friend of a friend. And we actually got to know each other, like, through this other friend. We'd go, like, a big circle of us would go for drinks or whatever. And so I was just texting him, like, why are men so trash? Why do I keep getting all of these massively...
The best chat-up line ever. Why are men trash?
Why are men trash? And he was like, I know, right? I never got a sense that he was ever trying to hit on me, which just made me want him even more. But like, yeah, I never got a sense that he was into me. He was just being a very genuine, like warm friend. And so I would just send him screenshots of all these horrible messages that I was getting from people on OkCupid. My favorite was, how are you, cock breath? That was it. That just the one line. Yeah, I got a lot of one-liners. A lot of stuff about me being a feminist.
So the problem with online dating for me is that if I got that message, I would write back. And I would I'm just wondering, like, what do you expect to achieve from this? So I'd end up having loads of these conversations with people when they're like, oh, I was just, like, you know, somebody would send me a dick pic and I'd go,
why?
What do you think is going to happen next? And they'd go, oh, I just thought it was funny. Like, and we'd have the most ridiculous conversations, but I cannot leave it.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, I want to know exactly your motivation behind this.
Yeah.
Like, what did Hello Cock Breath think was going to happen next?
I have no idea. And I'm like, is this meant to be a neg? Like what is going on here?
Oh no, I know. I'd say it was somebody who like fantasizes about the idea of having like a dirty whore, you know, like some like fucking somebody who's just been fucked by someone else.
I don't even think it was that. It felt like just very, very juvenile. And I got a lot of stuff like that, especially because I put in my profile that I was like a feminist and that is important to me. And that just seems to invite the worst mm-hmm. of the worst mm-hmm. of the worst of the worst.
I used to love the sentences that start with, so if you're a feminist, what do you think about X? And you'd be like, oh,
I don't have time for this.
But like what I think about X is not necessarily to do with my feminism. It's to do with my being like a human, intelligent woman.
The other thing that I got quite a lot was, and I made the worst mistake in the world by saying that I am like, what's one of your favorite TV shows? I put in like Rick and Morty. That, and I do like Rick and Morty. It's a good TV show. But the problem was I'd get like the Rick and Morty fanboys who were like, good job for liking Rick and Morty. And I'm like, I don't need a fucking pat on the mm-hmm. the head for liking a TV show that you like.
Although, you know what? I'm the woman who gave women that bad reputation because I used to always put how much I loved Star Wars.
Yeah.
And I do love Star Wars now, but like before I really loved Star Wars, I used to be like, big Star Wars fan. And yeah. like I don't think I'd seen the first three properly. I could see bits of them. I just really liked the Ewoks.
Yeah.
And then I'd have conversations like that. And men would be like, oh, it's so great to find a woman who loves Star Wars. And I, like a little idiot, would be like, I know.
See, like we've all been there. Like, especially like when I was a teenager, I didn't really hang out with girls. I had my one best girlfriend, but I definitely subscribed to the, oh, women are catty and like girls are petty bitches and stuff. And I'm a guy's girl. Because I think we all fell into that. There was just something about...
I tried.
There was just something about like the early 2000s. I mean, if you think about like what was popular at the time, it was mostly like male rock bands. There wasn't a whole, mm-hmm. I mean, apart from like Britney Spears and stuff, the things that were considered like girly wasn't necessarily the things that were considered good. And yeah. Now I'm just like, I'm living my best life for all of the stuff in the 90s that I missed because I wanted to be a guy's girl. So now I'm like, Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, like Bewitched and...
Oh, not Bewitched.
They're coming out with a new album and I am so excited
about it. And they're playing Electric Picnic, aren't they?
Yeah.
But hang on now. Can we just go back to First Dates for a second?
Yeah.
When you watched it back...
Yeah.
Was there a big difference between your experience on the show and what they showed on TV, or was it pretty accurate?
It was pretty accurate. It was kind of a distilled version of what I don't want to say what I went through, because it wasn't like it was terrible. I had a really good time.
Okay, so
just because it was so awkward that I was leaning into the awkwardness. I'm just like, this couldn't go any worse.
You did look very amused. I mean, for people who haven't seen it, can you still watch it online? It's probably gone now.
I don't know.
So for anybody who hasn't seen it, Shauna went on a date with a man whose name I don't know.
Pranay. Yeah.
Who essentially just talked about himself for the entire time. And I remember myself and my housemate were watching
He didn't talk. But he did talk about it, like, himself. When he did talk,
about himself. He didn't ask you any questions. And I remember myself and my housemate were watching it. We were screaming at the TV going, ask her what she does. Because we were like, that's so interesting what you do.
Yeah.
And he didn't at any point say, what do you do? What brings you here? He was like, you know, I'm the kind of guy who this. And then there'd be like a really long, awkward silence.
Yeah.
Where you were obviously going, like, what do I do with that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's great for you.
So I tried to engage him so much. I think
it was so awkward. It was amazing.
It was, this might sound terrible. I was living for the awkwardness because I knew, like, first of all, I mean, I was worried that it was going to be shite telly, but then I was like, if they edit this right, it'll be
really good. Yeah.
But I was also just like, this is so bad that it's funny.
Yeah.
It's so bad that it's funny. And it took him halfway through the meal to ask me what I did for a living. Mm-hmm. I'm like, who does that? I was constantly like asking questions like, what do you do for a living? And he was like, I'm an aeronautics engineer. And I'm like, yes, Yahtzee. I'm from Seattle, Boeing country. Talk to me about airplanes. I love that shit. And he was like, well, I design airplane parts. And I'm like, okay, what parts? Tell me about like airplane. And I just got the impression that either he didn't really want to talk about his job or he didn't think that I would understand it. And either way, like, meh. But then I was like asking him about like what kind of music he was into, and he would kind of give me like one word answers. And then I was like, well, what kind of TV are you into, or like movies? And he was like, I don't really watch television. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this? Like, and then before we even ordered food, he was like, I've run out of questions to ask you. And he hadn't even asked me what I did for a living yet. And so I just got the impression that he either was very shy and didn't really know how to talk on camera, which is a skill in and of itself. And you're very aware of the fact that there's like cameras everywhere and the pressure's on. So it was either that or he took one look at me and was like, not really interested. Because I did ask him at one stage, I don't think this made the cut, but I did ask him, like, what did they ask you in the pre-interview? Because they do a pre-interview and then they bring you in and you have your date and then you do your exit interview. And he was like, oh, they asked me, like, what kind of girl I was interested in. And I was like, and, well, you know, what kind of girl are you interested in? And he said, someone with blonde hair and red lipstick.
Yeah.
And I was like, would you settle for a brunette with purple lipstick? And he just leaned back in his chair and stared into his whiskey and was like, you know. So I think he probably had his mind made up. Like, he just wasn't attracted to me.
I kind of got the impression that he was expecting. I remember talking to somebody who runs a dating agency, and she was saying that a lot of the time men will come in, and when she asks them to rate themselves, she'll say, oh, I think I'm like a 6 out of 10, and then she'll go, okay, and like, what kind of woman do you think you should be with? And they'll go, like, Georgia Salpa.
Yeah.
And she's like, what? So I almost feel like he was expecting a supermodel.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like really tall, like really long hair, like very kind of glam. And that he was like, oh, here's this like cool woman who I don't really know what to do with. And I also want to point out that for anybody listening who hasn't seen the show, there is merit in the argument that asking somebody what they do is really boring. So you could think, oh, maybe he just didn't want to ask that because it's a boring question. That wasn't it.
No.
Like he literally just was like, he wasn't asking you any questions about yourself. He didn't have the demeanor of a man who was interested in knowing anything about you.
Yeah.
Really. And then what happened afterwards? Like, did you have an awkward like, bye, like off camera or anything? Or is it all just the on camera bits that you see?
Yeah, it's like all the kind of on camera bits that you see. We do the like the exit shots where he's putting me into the taxi and then he gets into the taxi. And I actually like I needed to talk to the like producers afterwards, so I got into the taxi and then we did the shots and then I got out of the taxi and went to go have the chat with the producers. But I think he just got in the taxi and left. That was the last time I saw him.
So. And you didn't hear from him afterwards, you didn't message him?
I didn't hear from him afterwards, but I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. Like I've done media stuff before, so I understand that things are going to be edited, and I think I got edited particularly well out of it. There was stuff that they cut out. I think it made me look better than I probably was. Because, like, if you remember in that same episode, there was a guy who mentioned, like, the killing fields in Cambodia.
I don't remember. I think I was too busy going, go back to Shauna.
Oh, yeah,
what's
yeah.
What's she doing now?
So there was a girl who was on a date with this, like, really lovely guy. And he was very sweet and shy. But he started talking about, like, his trip to Cambodia and, like, the killing field. He went to go visit the killing fields. Not exactly, like, first date conversation. But they kind of made him out to look, like, just so incredibly awkward. And I'm like, that could have easily have happened to me, because in my, like, desperation to talk to Prinay about, like, literally anything, I started talking about the Salem witch trials, because he had never heard about the Salem witch trials. And so I'm, like, sitting there talking
first
about,
date,
like,
feminist conversation 101.
Women being hanged.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
for being perceived witches.
Oh, so hilarious.
And so I'm like, they very easily could have edited me to look like a complete crazy
because
person.
They did make you look very cool and also very tolerant, you know what I mean? Like because he was doing a lot of, like, leaning back in his chair and kind of going,
that was
so
the whole date.
I'll give you a sentence, then I'll lean back all the way back here, and then you'll have to, you know, it was hilarious television. It was insane.
I was watching the entire episode between my knees with the guy who I'm seeing now, with putting his arm around me, and he was like, it's okay. You really, like, really, you come out
you
of this
off
well.
Really well, no, yeah. You did.
But it was great. Like, I was watching it with him and my housemate and her boyfriend, because her boyfriend has a big projector at his place. So we had, like, a big,
nice,
like
a viewing
little,
party,
like, a viewing party where we all kind of had some wine and
you'd need it.
Watched me make a fool of myself on TV.
No. But you didn't. I mean, anybody who goes on TV and makes a fool of themselves, arguably, but you made as little a fool of yourself as you possibly could. Well done.
I think one of my favorite, because I still get people who stop me occasionally and they're like, you were that girl from First Dates. I'm like, that was 6 months ago. How do you remember that? The best was the day the referendum was announced, like, at Dublin Castle. I was at Dublin Castle. I was, like, so excited. I'm, like, no sleep at all. Like, just so tired, but, like, so excited. I'm like, the country is changing. And I get a tap on the shoulder. And I turn around and she was like, hi, I was on the same episode as you. And we hugged and it was so great. And then we made plans to go to the pub and then we never did.
That's disappointing.
I would still really, really love to go to the pub with her. She was so sweet. And I was just like, I'm so sorry. I can't remember how your date went. And she was like, yeah, it was a no. I'm like, yeah, well, our fabulousness was lost on them anyway.
A couple of weeks ago on Instagram stories, you were saying that since First Dates,
you
get a lot of men sliding into your DMs asking you out.
So
tell me about this.
So it was like the first few weeks after the show aired, I was getting a lot of emails, a lot of people sliding into my DMs saying, like, hey, I saw you on First Dates. You came across really well. It's a real pity about your date. And I would like to take you out to dinner or to coffee or whatever. And I, like, part of me was like, why would anyone see someone on TV have a bad date and think, you know what she needs? My dick. Like,
men. I feel like men, not all men, but some men could see that and be like, you know what, now I could really make up for that by giving her the date of her life. I think it's like an ego thing where they're like, she looks nice, I could take her out and give her a really good date to make up for that.
But also I think there's like a preconceived notion about what people think a sex shop owner is like on a date, what they think I might be like
hoary
in bed. But I don't have a problem with hoary. Hoary is totally fine. But I think they think that anything goes with me. Mm-hmm. And as my boyfriend and like previous boyfriends would attest to, I'm the biggest dork on the planet. Like, I think fart noises are funny. And so I think anyone who's thinking that I'm going to be like some sex kitten sex goddess is in for a rude awakening when I'm like, hey, let's watch Netflix and I'm just going to have some really bad indigestion right now.
Yeah.
Like,
let's watch Netflix and you rub my belly while I have gas.
Yeah.
I think it's probably an Irish thing as well in that we're so... I don't want to say repressed, because I don't think we're 100% still repressed. We're maybe like 35, 36%.
Yeah.
But I think there's kind of an overlap in their minds, again, not all men, between, say, somebody who owns a sex shop and a sex worker and a dominatrix and somebody who's into S&M. And they think that all of these things are one thing. Do you know what I mean? That they're like, if you will go on TV or on radio and talk about a dildo, then you clearly will indulge any fetish that I possibly have. And suddenly you're somebody who my fetish will be okay with.
It's an objectification rather than. And the thing is, like, I try to say this to anybody who follows me on like social media and Instagram. I am okay with talking about sex. It's literally what I do for a living. If you have a question pertaining to your sex life or about sex generally, I am more than happy to answer that question for you. Where I draw the line is when it involves me. If I can twig that you are hitting on me, and like, let's be honest, I know when you're hitting on me and when you're not. So if you come to me with a genuine question, I know if it's going to be genuine. If you're coming to me for, you know, whatever reason that involves me, like, I will know that instantly because I get enough of it. And so I don't want people... So it's kind of swung the other way, where now I get people messaging me, apologizing, saying, I'm sorry, I know this is, like, really offensive, but I have a question about X. And I'm like, no, please, like, do not... If you have a genuine question, I want you to come to me.
Yeah, of course
That's not offensive, and I want to help you. I want to help find the right product for you, or if you don't need a product, I'm going to tell you that as well. I really want to help people. I just don't want people to hit on me because I don't think it's appropriate. Now, in saying that, there are people who run shops in, like, let's say the States, or people who are like sex bloggers in like the States or England, where they have a much higher population, and they very openly say that I really like it when people hit on me. I really like it when people ask me out, and that works for them because I think there's a bigger distance between. The proximity isn't as close. Because I feel like Ireland, especially, like, if I'm getting messages from people in Dublin.
Somebody who hits on you, you're going to see them in Tesco.
I could very easily see them the next day in town. And, like, sometimes I do. Like, sometimes I'll get messages from people who are like, I totally, like, I saw you out in the street today. And I'm like, why didn't you come say hi? Like,
yeah, no. I was actually just talking to a friend about that yesterday, about how somebody once sent me a photograph of myself that they'd taken from behind me and said, oh, I just saw you on the Halfpenny Bridge or something. And I was like, that's so weird. Just come over and say hi. Yeah. Or people will message me and go, I saw you in town today. I didn't want to say hi. And I'm like, please do. Like, being really nice, but also kind of going, it freaks me out sometimes when I feel like somebody's looking at me and I didn't know. Do you know what I mean? That I'm like, just come over and say hi. It's much more normal.
I had a moment like that, like, just on the other end of it, where I was walking to my office. I looked into Boojum because I eat in Boojum all the time. And Michael Fry from Twitter, like, at Big Dirty Fry, was sitting there eating a burrito. And I was just like, holy shit. I really want to, like, say hello, but also I kind of want to just, like...
You don't want to disturb someone eating a burrito. I don't want to disturb someone eating a burrito. Act.
And then I was like, do I tweet him and be like, I just saw you eating a burrito? But that's fucking weird as well. But he follows me, so I wonder if, like...
I like to if sometimes, that would have been okay. I like to sometimes send people pictures of themselves, but only if it's somebody I know. So, like, one day I saw Liam having lunch in Paris Court, and I sent him a picture of himself. And he was like, that's really creepy, but it was funny because, like, we know each other.
Yeah, yeah. So I think
wasn't it funny? It was funny.
Hilarious.
So, like, I can kind of, like, see both sides of it. But at the same time, I just feel like if you see me out in public, if you want to say hello to me, I'm okay with that. Yeah. Like, that's totally fine. Yeah.
Say hi, but don't later say, I creepily saw you today.
Yeah.
Like, and you didn't know I was there.
So just, like, going back to, like, the first dates thing and people emailing me. So it was happening, like, a lot when, like, just after it aired. Mm-hmm. And one of them was an email from a guy who asked me out, and then last week rang me up on the phone, like, got my number off my website, because I have, like, my business number.
Oh my god, who even makes calls these days?
Oh, I get tons of calls from people, mostly like from people down the country. I noticed that like when it comes to like Dublin customers, they want to email you, and people down the country want
We're
to have
so
the chat.
We're so modern up here.
They want to have the chat. And so I get a lot of older women from down the country who want to have the chats.
Oh, they're cute.
And it's so lovely. So I got a phone call from like some random number, and I just assumed, you know, probably some lovely, lovely older woman from down the country. And he was like, "Hi, is this Shauna?" And I said, "Yes, it is. This is she." And he was like, "Hi, I emailed you a few months ago. I was wondering if you got it." And I was like, "Oh, was this about like a purchase or something?" And he was like, no, it was I saw you on First Dates." I knew what he was asking. Mm-hmm. My heart sunk, but I just wanted to double check just in case. Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Was this about an interview?" And he said, "No, this was about me taking you out on a date." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, I'm really sorry. I don't go out on dates, like unsolicited dates with strangers. I'm very, very sorry. I'm very flattered, but I just don't do that." And he was like, "Well, you know, I'm normal, like." And the thing was, he was so sweet about it. And I felt kind of bad, but then he started to talk over me, and he started to ask me questions about the shop. He was like, "Do you have like a physical shop?" And I'm,
"Oh God."
And I was like,
"It was definitely going to show up with flowers."
"Oh yeah." And I was like, "No, I don't. I'm sorry." And he was like, "You know,
I'm sorry. I don't have anywhere you can come and stalk me face to face."
I think he
My
just,
apologies.
Yeah, he just didn't understand boundaries. And what got me was I got off the phone with him, and I went on Instagram, and I said my little piece about like why it's inappropriate for people to ask me out on my social media channels. And I was like, why do I still feel bad for the guy? And it's because like he's being taught that is okay.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
boundaries don't matter, and that it is romantic
to pursue and persist. Yeah.
And so like my heart goes out to him, because he genuinely, I think he just was a very shy guy who just wanted to take me on a date and thought like, "I'm going to have this big romantic gesture, and this will be a story that I can tell the grandkids that I saw, you know, her on the TV and we met."
Granny on a dating show.
Yeah. So my heart like went out to him, but at the same time, I really want it to be known to people. Anyone listening, please don't ask me out through my social media channels. If we run in the same circles, like maybe ask me out then. But I think because of what I do, I need to protect myself and
you need to have boundaries there.
My boundaries and my personal safety is like so important to me. And I said that to him on the phone, and he continued to be like, "But I'm normal." And
anybody who has to say I'm normal,
yeah,
like. I mean, my heart goes out to him too, to a certain extent. But if you have to say to somebody, "You know, I'm normal," you're like, you're doing something that implies otherwise if you have to say that.
Yeah.
I once went on a date with somebody who asked me out through my social media channels right after the first time I'd ever written about suffering from depression. I got a DM from someone saying, "I just read your piece. That's really brave, blah, blah, blah." And I think it was somebody who I kind of tweet, you know, like, you know, we followed each other and we tweeted before. Mm. And he basically said that he wanted to take me out on a date. I think I was probably like 22 or 23 at the time. Mm. And I was really flattered, and I was like, "Oh, great." And it's just so funny thinking about it now, because I think he expected me, you know, people have a certain perception of people who suffer from mental illness, probably a lot to do with TV as well.
Yeah.
I think he expected me to be like a very wan, shy kind of person who was very introverted and who he could bring out of her shell.
Yeah.
And I think then he was just really taken aback, because we had basically had an argument when he said something like vaguely racist, and I was like, "What the hell? Like, what?" Yeah. And we had this stupid argument in a pub, and then he walked me kind of half home. I think we went for like two drinks, and I was like, "Okay, I'm gonna go home now." And then later on he texted me and said, "I don't think this is gonna work out." And I was so enraged, because I was like, "Of course it's not. You don't get to decide that."
And I feel kind of bad, because I keep like saying like, "Oh, men are trash, blah, blah, blah," because it is inappropriate for anybody to be acting that way. But it is consistently men. I have never, ever, ever had a woman like ask me out inappropriately. It's usually I'm really sorry. I don't know if this is the right channel, but like.
I'm trying to think. I'm sure I've asked out somebody inappropriately. I went to Bank of Ireland once and I applied for a bank loan, for a car loan, and the guy who was servicing my loan, so it's called, the guy who was doing the loaning, the lending, was really hot.
Yeah.
And we were chatting about, he was really into film and we were chatting about films, and I think at the times I was working in the, at the time I was working in the Irish Times and I was getting invited to a lot of premieres and stuff. Mm. And we'd had a few meetings because I'd, you know, gotten in, I had to fill out some form and then I had to fill in something else. And then he called me at one stage to go, look, that's all gone through, blah, blah, blah. And I said, listen, while I have you, like, I have tickets to this film on Thursday, would you like to come with me? And he was like, oh yeah, great, right? So I was like, oh my God, I've got to take with the guy from the bank. It was really hot. And we went to the cinema. And afterwards, we went for a drink at the church, which I just won't go there anymore. Such a terrible memory. No. But like, I think it was just because it was near Cineworld. And we were sitting there chatting and he said something about, oh, my girlfriend follows you. And I went, you're what? And he went, my girlfriend. And I said, your girlfriend. And he said, oh, yeah. So like, she was saying this, that like, you thought this was a date. And I was like, yeah. What did you think it was? And he was like, well, I mean, I don't know. You asked me to go and see a movie and like we got around. And like, to a certain extent, I'm like, I get it. Like, men and women should be able to fraternize without it always being assumed to be a date. But also, if a woman you barely know asks you out to like a nighttime occasion, it's probably a date.
It's probably a date.
Yeah. And I was so mortified.
And the fact that like he talked about it with his girlfriend, it
sounded... I was really embarrassing. I was so embarrassed.
But it sounded like he wanted a free movie ticket.
Oh, yeah. Like, and like... Like, obviously, that she had said to him, you know, she thinks this is a date. And he was like, lol.
Yeah.
And then I saw him a couple of years later on anotherfriend.com. Mm. And he messaged me and was like, oh, like, you know, you haven't any luck or something. And I was like,
hey. You haven't any luck? Jesus Christ.
Or maybe it was plenty of fish. How's the fishing? Mm. How's the fishing? They used to love saying that.
Gross.
I know. Speaking of love, let's talk about being a wedding. How did that happen?
Oh,
you're a wedding celebrant now.
I'm a wedding celebrant now.
To get the words out.
So now I can like marry you and take care of your honeymoon. Hello. Yeah.
Surely if you love each other, you can go on your honeymoon without sex toys.
Oh, that's very true. But sometimes you might want a sex toy. So
channeling my mother. Why would you need sex toys if you're in a happy relationship? Thank God she doesn't listen to my podcast and murder me.
Because sometimes sex toys are fun, Rosemary's mom.
I don't want her to know that. But do go on.
So, one of the gals, so I share an office with two women who work in theater. One's a costume designer, the other is a director. And the costume designer did the course last year and loved it. And I went to her wedding and it was just so beautiful. And I have experience, like I used to be a wedding photographer. So I know the wedding industry a bit. And I loved the idea of being able to facilitate someone's big day. It just... Like, the idea of it, like, filled me with so much joy. And, like, I'm such a dork. Like, I'm a hopeless romantic, which is something that I've, like, had to admit to myself in, like, the last year. Because, like, before I'm just like, I'm not romantic. I hate rom-coms. I hate you guys. But now I'm just, like, I'm in a new relationship. So I'm like, I love everything and everyone. And so she did the course. And I was like, you know, I think this is something that I can do. Because I've done a bit of public speaking before. I love doing podcasts and things. I love doing radio. Would love to do more radio, guys, if there's anyone in radio.
Listen,
hire me.
You and me both.
And so I felt like it was something that I could do as like another little side gig that would make me happy. Because like that's the other thing I love about my job is like the variety that it brings me. And I'm always looking for like something like new to do as well. Mm-hmm. So I love variety. And so, yeah, I signed up for the course. This was the first time that the Irish Institute of Celebrants did a 6-week intensive course. It runs across 6 months. You do one class a month for 6 months. And they were like, no, we really have faith that there are some people out there, maybe people with public speaking experience, who could do this in 6 weeks and be really good.
So did you do one class a week for 6 weeks?
I did. Yeah, one class a week for 6 weeks. Well, the first weekend, it was the full weekend.
Okay.
So that was really intense because they start off, like the very first class, they tell you all about like the business of being a celebrant, like what you're going to learn across the 7 weeks, like what it takes to be in a celebrant. And they told us like up front at the end of like day two of this weekend, you're probably going to go away and think that's too much work, but just stick with it. We promise like it will be worth it in the end. And we will make sure that you will be able to be a professional practicing celebrant. And it was a lot of like kind of improv-y, voice coaching, that kind of thing. A lot of the classes were taught by people who are practicing stage actors. So it's a lot of learning how to project and speak from your diaphragm.
I hadn't already thought about that aspect of it.
Because a lot of times I suppose if you're doing a wedding of like 200 people or more, you might be mic'd up. But for smaller ceremonies of like maybe 30 to 100 people, it's going to be down to...
And a lot of non-religious ceremonies, you're going to be like on the rooftop of the marker or hotel room with no mic.
You really need to push your voice. Mm-hmm. I don't really have that much of a problem with it. I'm told that I'm too loud sometimes.
Americans.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. and because like I've done like public speaking before, I was just like, I know this is something that I can do. But it's like it was hard work, like for 6 or 7 weeks. It was 6 weeks of classes, and then on the seventh week we had our exams. And it's tough because it's all you think about. That was like my entire summer was like preparing for this course.
And sweating.
Then doing this course. Yeah. There's so much more to being a celebrant than just like getting up and doing your bog standard ceremony. Like you're essentially, you meet with a couple, you write their love story. That's the other thing. Mm-hmm. Creative writing is incredibly important. And being able to like write your own copy in the style of a ceremony and coming up with like ceremony enhancements. So you have like your unity candle or a hand fasting or whatever, but like being able to write your own copy that's going to be unique to each couple.
And being able to edit it for each couple's style.
And like, you know, not every couple is going to have their own readings prepared or have their own music prepared. So you might have to make suggestions. Like, what are you guys into? Okay, well, here is some poetry by such and such person.
Listen, get them to play Christina Perry, 1,000 Years. And read that one, that Shakespeare one that's like, love is not love, which alters when an alteration finds, and then you're finished. I'd be great. I'd be like, you should all do this. Those are the two wedding-y things I know. And did you like it? Like, are you excited about it now?
I'm so excited about it. And actually, the day that I was doing my final exam last week, my sister was actually performing her first wedding. Now, in the States, it's a bit different. Like, you just fill out a form online and you're made a minister. And so she was actually coming to me, like, asking me for advice. Like, how do I put together this ceremony?
Well, that's kind of annoying. Come over and do the course, you head wrecker. I'm not giving you all my info.
She did a good job. I saw photos from it. She was marrying her best friends in the woods.
Well, they weren't going to complain anyway.
So. They weren't going to complain. But apparently, like, she got, like, a standing ovation. But
it's not about her.
I know it's not about her. The couple probably got the standing ovation, she was very happy with how it went. She was like, I kind of had issues with crying during the ceremony. I'm like, did you like do an ugly cry? And she's like, I didn't. They did, but I did. Like, she's like, I started, like, the tears started coming. I'm like, yeah, that's one thing that they tell us is it's very, very difficult. If you have friends or family hiring you, it's very, very difficult. And you need to be in control of your emotions because otherwise you'll just be bawling, crying. You won't be able to finish the ceremony. So if you're someone who can control your emotions, then you're fine. But if you feel like you might cry at your sister's wedding or your brother's wedding or whatever, then maybe don't be the person in charge of the ceremony.
Mm. I'm trying to think. I don't think I would cry.
No, I don't think I would either.
I sang at a friend's wedding once and everybody was crying. Mm. Not because, like, because it was brilliant. It was very moving. Not because it was bad. Everyone's like, the noise. But I didn't even feel like crying. Well, probably because I was so nervous as well.
Yeah.
It's slightly different. And do you have any weddings lined up?
I have a couple of people who are potentially going to book me. They've slid into my DMs
And then you have the chats and you see...
Yeah. So like I've set up an Instagram. It's at Shauna Scott Celebrant. Shauna with a W, because my parents cursed me with a W. And yeah, so that's my other business page. And hopefully like I'll have like a Facebook set up. I'm in the process of setting up like all my social media and stuff and possibly a website.
Oh, it'll be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is actually really nice to be involved with weddings. Like it's such a positive thing to do.
It's lovely. Like I really, really, like I love talking to people about their origin stories. Like this is what I said this to my boyfriend, I love more than anything else at the very start of the relationship, the getting to know you phase, because I love hearing people's own like mythology, like where they came from, like how they grew up, like especially Irish people, because it's so different from the way I grew up. I love to hear those stories, and like, and he's a big culty, so he has lots of like culty stories.
Well, Shauna Scott, thank you so much for joining me on How to Be Sound. How can people find you? So you're at Shauna Scott Celebrant on Instagram with a W for your wedding celebrant side.
So for Sex Sherpa, it's at Sex Sherpa, all one word, and it's the same for Instagram and Twitter.
And it's sexsherpa.ie, SEXSIOPA.
Yep, no fada.
Why would there be a fada?
Someone told me that there was a fada over
there's,
the eye, and there's
no
not.
Fada, no. Yeah. Oh my God, what a fake Irish person. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now it's time for the thank yous. First on my thank you list is my producer, Liam Geraghty, whose episode of Meet Your Maker with Louise Gold you may have heard as a bonus episode of How to Be Sound last week. You can listen to his podcast at meetyourmaker.ie or anywhere you listen to podcasts. And he's brilliant. Thanks so much, Liam. And thank you to all of you for listening. I really, really appreciate you taking the time, giving me the clicks and giving me your money on Patreon. To all of my patrons who donate $3.33 per month or more, they get the special extra bonus tier, which I regret now, of having their name read out in the podcast. So without further ado, I would like to thank Avril Flynn, Timmy Hennessy, Sarah Conroy, Kira McGuinness, Eleanor Farrell, Heidi Gardner, Sarah Hanrahan, Marina Hogan, Aisling Dollard, Sinead Fegan, Breed Gallagher, Sonia Mary, Michelle Barrett, James Gallagher, Sarah McCann, Anya Kelly, Sarah O'Donovan, Claire Gormley, Jill Murray, Sarah Breen, Roisin Blade, Louise White, Owen D, Carly Colgan Bates, Aoife Connolly, Kira Byrne, Dervla Kinsella, Eving McBride, Niamh Nigaun, Aoife Bradley, Katie Joy, Sharon Lennon, Claire Hegarty, Trish O'Sullivan, Shauna O'Hara, Katrina Kennelly, Sharon, Marita Leonard, Aoife Campbell, Joanne, Kira Norton, Stephen Harding, Karen Cregan, and Dina Walker. You are all very special people in my heart, and thank you. Bye!
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.